Welcome to the OA Light a Candle Meeting podcast. Visit our website at www.oalaig.org, where you'll find three separate speaker feeds with over 400 speaker files, forms for ordering CDs for these speakers, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Colleen.
Hi, everyone. I'm Colleen. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Colleen.
I'll go ahead and pass around my pictures. And thank you, Martha, very much for asking me to speak. And congratulations to the chip takers. And happy birthday. That's so awesome. To qualify, I've been abstinent, August 4th of this year was 10 years. My top weight that I know of when I came in these rooms was 307 pounds. I've been maintaining about 160 pound weight loss for almost that same amount of time. And I'm really just... I'm really just very humbled and honored and grateful to this program because it saved my life. I always carry these visuals with me along with my pictures. Those of you who heard me speak before, these are my size 24 jeans that when I first came in I wouldn't wear because they were too tight, but I wouldn't go out and buy a size 26 because I was in denial that I was a 26. And the miracle of this program is that I can fit two legs into one today. And, the sponsor that I had for many, many years who basically saved my butt, amongst other things, told me to keep it. She said, because if you're ever too tired to work your program, they're waiting for you. And that's the reality, you know. Like, each day that I am granted a new day, I get a choice. And that choice is either to continue on the path of recovery, which is often uncertain and, comes with things that I can't envision, which can be good and not so good. Or I can go down the path that I know really, really well, which leads to death and destruction at a very slow pace, at a point which I probably would not perhaps notice until I was too far into it. And that's really how I lived my life at over 300 pounds. You know, I literally waddled around and just kind of like was blotting my way through. And, you know, when I think about, you know, what it was like, there's a lot of it that I have only come to know since being in recovery because it's become a process of waking up and being aware. See, because I'm an addict with food. I'm a main addict with food. So I was pretty drugged out. You know, there was no, like, I'm aware that, like, I'm eating too much and it hurts. And, like, I was just, like, out, checked out, you know. And I had learned to check out at a pretty early age. I don't remember my first binge, per se. I remember liking the Jimmy's at the Carvel, which is an ice cream place back east. some of you know what I'm talking about. They'd roll the ice cream in the Jimmy's, and I remember when I'd lick it, I was like, oh, yeah. You know, like sugar was my main thing. And when I had enough of that, then it would lead into other things. But that's sort of my mainline drug. And, it's a miracle when I think about that for 10 years, I haven't had any recreational sugar. It's absolutely amazing to me because I couldn't get through a moment, let alone a day, you know. I didn't have a lot of history of dieting because there really was just no point. I didn't even, like, have a sense of, like, what it would be to be at a healthy body weight. And the fact that I've been living at a healthy body weight for probably, like, 8 years or something now is just a miracle to me. And I'd probably say only in the last couple of years have I actually gotten that, like, this is who I am now. You know, it took me many years of, like, looking at myself in the mirror going, wait, who is that? You know, because when you're over 300 pounds and you're overweight your whole life and to not be that way is just kind of a weird, you know, it took a while for my brain to kind of catch up with the rest of me. And, you know, of course, when I first came in, they said that, they say that the only requirement is a desire to stop eating compulsively. I don't know that I had that desire, to be quite honest with you. because I didn't know that eating was a problem. Like, this is how out of it I was. Like, I didn't connect the dots. All I knew when I came in, you know, over 10 years ago, was that I was really uncomfortable in my body. Because my body had gotten to a size where I could no longer really ignore it, you know, because, like, I'd had too many incidents where I'd gone into the restaurant and I went to go sit in the booth and I didn't fit. And, the hostess did that sort of embarrassing thing. She's like, well, we could sit at the table. And I was mortified, you know. And I had stopped paying attention a long time before that to people's snarks and strange looks and perhaps comments under their breath about how much space I was taking up. I never quite understood why it was that I was always so exhausted all the time. Well, when you're carrying 300 pounds around, it's exhausting. Like, I used to think that I didn't like doing errands because it was just a pain. Well, the errands are kind of a pain anyways. But what I realized is that, like, when you're over 300 pounds, you're getting in and out of the car and in and out of the car and in and out of the car. I'm worn out. I'm just worn out, you know. And what's amazing today is that, like, I get in and out of the car all the time and it's like, it's not a big deal. I get on the elliptical machine for 45 minutes, and I get off, and I'm like, holy cow, how did that just happen? You know, not only how did that happen, but, like, that felt really good. I want to do that again. Huh? You know, like, who is this? Like, I literally sometimes I'm like, pinch me. Like, I'm living this life that I never thought imaginable. And it's not the one that I planned on either. I had this whole other plan. But, you know, that coming from a woman who thought that at the end of the week, you know, half a pizza and a batch of cookie dough was a really good idea. Like, that was my way of getting through it. I used to be a school teacher, and so I would, you know, I was such a good teacher that I would go into work on the weekends. Yes, because I got to stop at the AM/PM and pick up all my stuff. And I'd get into my classroom where nobody would bother me because nobody was there. And I'd eat, and I would correct and grade papers. And then, oddly enough, I would feel the sense of anxiousness as the food ran out. And then I would go home, and then I'd call the Pizza Hut guy, you know, and then do the rest of the deal. And then I'd pass out on the couch. And that was what I thought, you know, life was. Like, this is what I thought, okay. All the while feeling kind of disconnected and not really clear on, like, why life wasn't really getting any better, you know. And I just kind of had resigned myself that it wasn't going to get any better. That, you know, this is as good as it gets. And I remember actually when I was about 20 years old, I was in my late 20s when I came in, so this was years before I came into program. And I remember that feeling of, like, well, this just sucks. Like, I just, you know, like, that's it? This is it? You know, like, this is what I was looking forward to. Like, when I got older, I was going to be on my own, and this is it? You know, it sucks, you know? And, well, yeah, it sucks, because when you're trying to annihilate yourself, albeit very slowly, it sucks, you know? And, you know, what my life looked like, my plan was that, you know, I wanted to connect with you, but not really. Like, I wanted you to love me and admire me, but I wanted to keep you, like, at an arm's length. And because you could potentially hurt me. And, you know, that doesn't quite work, like, that whole thing about being open. And I wasn't willing to risk that. And I had friendships, and I think I had one or two sort of relationships in there somewhere. But I don't know that I ever really let anybody in, because how do you let somebody in to say, by the way, I think I'm a piece of shit and I don't deserve to be here and I think everything's my fault and I'm just hoping it'll end really soon. I remember once when I was in college, I was in sort of a position where I was helping out with this church organization that I was very involved with. And there was a kid who had come into town who, he was 18, and he was on his second round of leukemia. And he had come into town with his parents, because this was like a last-ditch effort. The university I was associated with had a cancer center. And the pastor that I worked with asked me, you know, would you go and visit with the family and spend time? And I remember this kid. He was so full of life. Oh, my God. He had, like, all these plans, things he was going to do. And, you know, he was, like, even though, like, he knew, like, this is possibly, like, his last shot at anything. And even his parents, you know, like, his mother cried a lot whenever I talked to her, which I try not to talk to her too much. And we would go in and we would pray with them. And I remember the day that he died. And I remember I just said, God, why couldn't you have just taken me instead? Because, like, what the heck do I do now? Like, you know, here was somebody who, like, wanted to live. I don't even want to live. Like, I'm just kind of hoping it'll go away. And that's how dead I was. I mean, that was 10 years before I came into these rooms, 8 years before I came into these rooms. So I had a lot more of, like, killing myself left to do. You'd think I would have done. No, not yet, you know. And I had a lot of arguments with God. I always had a very active relationship with God, and I had no problem screaming and yelling at God. I would always apologize afterwards. I find that most helpful for keeping that line open. But, you know, I was really pissed off because things, you know, everything was a mess. And I was like, this sucks, and I don't know, you know, I don't know where you are. I just don't know where you are. And what I realized when I came into these rooms is I looked at the steps on the wall, and I remember, like, I was like, God's in, like, every single one of those suckers. What do you know? You know? And I remember years before when I was at a really low place in my life where I had gone to be of service. I was working as an inner-city school teacher for a faith-based organization, because I felt like this was what God wanted me to do, and I felt like I'd completely been dropped out of an airplane and been like, good luck, you know. And everything that could go wrong did go wrong. I couldn't get along with my roommates. I had the worst class in history. I mean, like, this teacher who had taught them for 24 years, had taught for 24 years the year before, quit because of this class, right? This is how, like, it was terrible. And I was thousands of miles away from anything I knew, and I was like, where is God? Where is God? Like, this is why I brought you here. And I remember this notion of that God doesn't turn his back on us. God doesn't abandon us. And I was like, well, then you tell me where you are, because I must be doing something that I'm not aware of, that I'm pushing you away, but I don't know what that is, so you need to show me. And probably, it was probably about 4 years later when I came into these rooms and I saw God in those steps, and I walked into the meeting in Derby, and I was like, oh my God. Literally, like, whoa, okay. And what I got was, there was no room for God when food was my God. Like, I was so busy stuffing my face that, like, there was no, like, room for God. And, you know, I'd like to say that, like, in 10 years of recovery, that when I eat, I'm not a little out of it, but that's not true. Like, when I'm eating, like, that's really all I can focus on. Like, it's terrible sometimes. Like, I don't like to have lunch with coworkers because I'm, like, I'm focusing on my food. Like, I'm, you know, you're really nice and everything, but, like, this is my portion, you know. Like, I need to remember this, because if I don't remember this, I'm going to be like, I need more when we're done, you know. But I know clearly, like, when I'm putting something in my mouth, like, there's a little bit of a disconnect there sometimes between me and God, except in the moments when I remember where it comes from, you know. And, you know, but I don't, today, by the grace of God, eat my alcoholic foods. I don't eat in between meals, and I don't eat in a way that destroys myself. And that is amazing to me. That is absolutely amazing. Like, every single day that I'm abstinent is, like, a spiritual experience on some level, because it is not my doing, you know. My doing is the part where I suit up and I show up, which is what I've learned how to do in this program. You know, my part is doing things that I don't want to do. There's a woman in this program who I love. When she said once at a meeting she spoke, she said, I sometimes measure my day by the number of things I do that I don't want to do. And I was like, that's really good. And, you know, when I do my 10 step at the end of the night, that's sometimes how I measure my day. You know, where is my level of recovery? How many things I do that I didn't want to do? You know, they talk about in the AA 12 and 12 that, you know, this is the step that differentiates the men from the boys, and they talk about, because you're working towards a God objective instead of your own objective. And what I've learned is that this program is about growing up, you know, that I can do the little temper tantrum, a little I don't want, and you know, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, that's being a kid. I'm not that kid anymore, you know. And sometimes I have days when I have to constantly remind myself, like, Colleen, you're not there anymore, you know, and I have to look down at my feet and look at myself in the mirror and go, no, you're all grown up now. You need to act like it, you know. And to do that, sometimes I need to call my fellows or get on the phone with my sponsor or do some writing or make phone calls or, read the literature or get to a meeting, like whatever I need to do to bring me back to the present, because I find that that's basically where life is happening. And if I want to experience it, which by the grace of God I do, you know, each day that I wake up, I say, thank you, God, for the gift of this new day and the opportunity of abstinence, to be abstinent and of service. And that's really how I believe, that the only reason I'm alive today is because I have the opportunity to be abstinent and to be of service. Now, that doesn't mean that I always like the opportunities that I'm given to be of service. But they're always growing opportunities, and they're always opportunities to open up my heart more. You know, one of the things that I realized, that not only did the food keep me checked out, but it kept this nice sort of steel cage around my heart. And I know that in the first couple of years of my recovery, that there was this sense of like the steel began to melt away. And, you know, what's amazing to me is I was so shut down when I came in here, I couldn't even cry. The only thing that would get me to cry really was when we had to talk about eating less food. Then I was like a ball. I can't do it! You know, like, and I literally was like, I think my sponsor just had so many laughs on my behalf. But, you know, like, I watch little cheesy commercials and I cry. Like, and I love that, because I feel like it's a sign to me that my heart is supple and it's open and it's willing, you know, it's willing to take a chance. It's willing to believe that maybe things are going to be okay and that maybe things are okay, you know. Because, see, I used to think that when something went wrong, that I was wrong and that it was my fault and that I was a mistake and I really need to fix this. And the reality is that most things I can't fix. The only thing I can fix is what I did, you know, or to ask for my thinking to be changed. And it really, really just pretty much levels down to my thinking. And my thinking will dictate my feelings. And then from that, oftentimes, actions will come from that. And what I've found is that what abstinence has given me is it's given me that pause between thinking and feeling and acting. And in that pause, I have that opportunity to ask God for help, to turn to my fellows, to seek out something other than what's in between my ears for a solution. And that's what I need to do, because, you know, no matter how brilliant I may think I am at the moment, or how much I know, I just couldn't possibly know. It's just not possible, you know. And so I need to link with something greater than me that I think has a better understanding of what's happening on a larger level. Because I believe that I'm not here just for me. I believe that I'm here to play a role. And I need to connect with the director. I need to connect with the producer. And sometimes when I remember that, that producer and that director is just there to remind me, like, Colleen, you're doing fine, it's okay. You know, I know this isn't quite what you thought it would be, because, you know, in abstinence, there's been a lot of life. You know, there's been relationships, there's been breakups, there's been connecting with my family and not connecting with my family. And, you know, what's amazing to me is next weekend, my father's going to be 80 years old this year, and so they're having like a party, family reunion. I say party like that because my father's not a party type, so this is my mother's idea. But that's okay. They've been married for 40 years. I'm sure he was expecting it. So the fact that I'm going back home for that, and that I can show up and be thankful for him is so much of a miracle, I can't even tell you. Like, I don't have the time to go into all the details, but there's a lot of shit that's happened with my father that should never have happened. And you know, by all accounts of what's supposed to happen, what's not supposed to happen. And what I realized is that it's created an opportunity for me to learn what it really means to love and to forgive. What it really means. You know, when it's not pretty and when it's not all tied up in a nice pink bow. And to be able to coexist in that place of duality where, like, things that are messy and things that are beautiful exist in that very same moment. And, you know, somebody who doesn't like uncertainty and someone who doesn't like, you know, that not black and white, it's amazing. Like, I was always looking for it's either this or it's this. And most things are somewhere in the gray, you know. And I don't really like gray. It's really not as attractive. Black is much more stunning. White is pure. You know, it's like, what is this gray? But you know what? Gray is a mixture of lots of really cool colors. Really beautiful colors. And when I don't look at it as the gray and I take a step back, and that means I have to take a breath and take a step back, and I see the reds and the blues and the purples and the pinks and the greens, and I see the absolute stunning beauty. And I see that in you, and I see that in me, and I see that in the circumstances when I get rear-ended, and when my, you know, coworker, you know, pisses me off, and the person on the trainer, like, in class can't get it, and I've got to be that much more patient, you know. I would like her to be black, you know, so I can go white and go the other direction, but no, she's red, you know. And probably sounds like a bunch of mumbo jumbo, but because I really have no idea what I'm saying at this point. All I can tell you is that somehow, by not eating my alcoholic foods, by showing up, by connecting with my higher power through my prayer and meditation, which I do every day, even when I don't feel like I'm doing it, even when I fall asleep when I do it, even when it's not, you know, all nice and tidy, you know, when I do my step work, when I call my sponsor, when I connect with my sponsees, when I do all these things that I've learned how to do, when I live those 12 steps as though my life depends upon it, because it does. You know, I'm in this program for the rest of my life, and right now that's just this moment, so I can do that. You know, but I, you know, it's like I was wandering around looking for some sense of direction, and what do you know? There's 12 of them. And every time I forget one, all I have to do is open up the book or call a fellow. And they go, yeah, that's like in the third step when you turn your will. And I'm like, I don't want to turn my will. Okay. My sponsor would be like, just notice that. And how's that working for you? And I'm like, ah, oh, thank you. And, you know, it's like pretty much as far as I can tell, all the answers are in the big book. You know, it says that, you know, precisely how we have recovered. So it tells me that this book, you know, this big book, which a bunch of drunks put together, it is like my design for living. You know, and it tells me this is, you know, living in rough going or something like that. I apologize, I'm not quoting it exactly, but like it doesn't say, you know, living when everything's good or living when everything makes sense, you know. And I'm the person who ate over, like, a broken nail. So, like, the fact that, like, I can sit in moments when I'm in conflict with someone and I don't know yet when it's going to get resolved and not eat over it is amazing to me, you know. That my food doesn't change based on how I feel. Because, honestly, if I'm standing in front of the refrigerator and saying, what do I feel like eating? I am in so much trouble because I'm having feelings, you know, because I can feel hungry after finishing eating, you know, like that just, that whole mechanism in me, I don't know if it's because I'm a 100-pounder, but like that gauge thing is broken, it is broken. So, you know, I go by like, is it breakfast, is it lunch, is it dinner, or is it time for a snack? Like, that's it, you know, and if it's not, then I'm no business eating, and I need to find something else to do. And, you know, I pick up the phone and make outreach calls, and I say, how are you doing? Like, talk to me, because I need to get out of my head. You know, and somehow doing all those things creates an incredible life in which I'm at peace with myself and I don't look in the mirror and go, ugh, you know, in the morning. Because I used to do that. Like, I would never say, you're such a, you know, and use curse words, but I would just be like, ugh, you know, and the first thing when I saw myself in the mirror in the morning. And I don't do that today, you know. And And it doesn't mean that, like, I love myself all the time or anything like that, or that I love you all the time, but I'm willing to believe that within you there's a kernel of something that connects me to you. And so even if I can't see it, I know there's a way that I can begin to see it if I'm willing to. And, you know, in the OA 12 and 12, in step 8, it talks about being willing to do things you don't want to do. And I love that. I love that because that so much measures my recovery. It's like, I don't have to want to do it. My sponsor used to say to me all the time, it doesn't matter what you think, it doesn't matter what you feel, it matters what you do. This is a program of action. And, you know, and we can't think our way into right action, but we can act our way into right thinking. And so that's what I have to do, is I have to get into action. Because if I spend, again, too much time in between my ears, I'll start thinking that pizza and cookie dough are a really good option, you know. And one of the things that that I congratulations, by the way, to the chip takers and the birthday people. I think I said that already, so I can tell already I'm so not clear with what I'm saying. But, I'm just eternally grateful for this program and for the life that I get to live today. And I can say that even though I really have no freaking clue what's going to happen, I'm okay. And there is a kernel, maybe a few kernels, of hope of, like, it. Every time it's always turned out much better than I thought it would be. And so that gives me an opportunity to hope, and that's what this program offers. And so if you're struggling or you're not sure, just stick around because the hope is here. So thank you for letting me share. So I guess there's time for questions. Yes. Okay. Sure, you asked me to talk about my conception of a higher power. Well, I came into this program with a conception of a higher power, which has expanded tremendously. For me, it shows up in different ways. One is like a person, and the other is, I see it a lot in nature, in flowers and trees and bugs and, like in when I'm in my car and I'm frustrated and like one of my favorite songs comes on the radio, there's somebody pulls up in front of me and cuts me off, but they have this really cool bumper sticker. You know, like it's, I find that it's like I see God in everything. So what I've learned is that I can no more confine God to what I think God might be, because God's always looking to surprise me with how God's going to show up. And so I just have to be awake. I only share my program with people outside of program if they seem to be somebody who's asking lots of questions. I've had people ask me about this, and I don't remember what I said. I didn't say it was OA. I just said something like, oh, it's just a little reminder for me. This I got at my morning meeting. They give 10-minute chips, and they say if you want to recommit your program, and I just, because I'm going to see my family. I did it when I went back to see my family for my parents' anniversary. I had it around my watch, and it was helpful to me. So if people begin to ask questions, I kind of, then I'll be more open, but I don't, like, walk around. Because I remember being over 300 pounds, some skinny chick came up to me and started talking about how she lost weight. I'd be like, get out of my way. like you know anything about, So, it's usually if it's somebody who comes to me in confidence or something like that. Yeah. Thanks. Yes. Sure. Promises that have been significant for me. A big one about financial insecurity. I've experienced a lot of freedom around that. Because I pretty much lived in fear around money a lot of the time. And what do you know, it's called being accountable with numbers. I didn't like the ones on the scale. I didn't like the ones in my checkbook. That's a big one. I'm trying to rack my brain, remember all the promises. I would say definitely, being able to handle situations which used to baffle me, a lot of those. I can't think of anything specific at the moment, but that usually entails, conversations or how to interact with people or my family, or how to stand in my own truth about things. Because I spent a lot of my time trying to shape shift to be what I thought you wanted me to be, and to be able to say to somebody, you know, thank you, but that doesn't work for me. Like, that's a huge miracle. Lots of prayer. That resentment prayer, really good. Oh, sorry. She asked me how do I reconcile the duality with my father. That, lots of prayer, lots of writing. I've definitely sought outside help about that. Worked with my sponsors. Lots of prayer, and recognizing, what I've found is it sort of correlates that my level of openness to forgiveness with him directly affects my forgiveness of myself and those around me. So, there isn't a specific formula. It's really just knowing that what I want more than anything is to be at peace, with myself and with those about me. And having boundaries. You know, there was a time when we didn't speak. There was a time when I didn't have anything to do with him. I allowed myself the time to be really, really angry. And that was important. But I knew on some level it wouldn't always be that way. And just trusting that the process. Yeah. Like eating alone at work. I actually do eat with my coworkers. I just feel like I don't say much because I'm busy eating. it's really just being willing to be a little uncomfortable sometimes, and be more like it's an opportunity to connect with people, because that's what people do. Like, they connect around food. And I'm like, listen, I'm out of the food. Like, I'm not. Like, we throw potlucks at work all the time. They love to eat. I'm like, really? And I bring my own food, and I eat my own thing. And they're so used to it now that I don't even care. They're like, yeah, we know you're bringing your own stuff, you know. And but like, I guess for me, the big thing is not to feel shame about it. Just to get that I'm not normal around food. I'm never going to be normal around food. It tells me that in chapter 3. You know, it doesn't matter how long I'm in recovery, I will never be normal around food. And as long as I'm at peace with it, like, what other people think really doesn't matter. So, all right, thank you very much.